Blog Talk Radio.
And will I wonder why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Michael and I will share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael, or myself, or forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, your co-hosts, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, April the 13th, 2017. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We're honored that you're here to spend this time with us, and we are getting ready tomorrow morning to be on the road. Well, actually, to go to Wilmington from Oak Island, make a 45-minute journey and drop Michael J. off at the airport. Son's been down here for last week playing with us on the beach as we finished up intensives, and then we're on the road to Heartland and on to St. Louis, so... lots happening, lots of packing. Send packing energy. Ease and grace in packing. And beyond that, we are here to understand and integrate how to live a life that is in harmony with the way the eternal forces of the universe operate. When you realize that in the ancient Aramaic language, the word law has nothing to do with the will or the instruction or the demand or the command of a superior, the word law simply reflects an understanding that there are eternal forces in the universe. And if you harmonize with those eternal forces, you don't bang into them. If you're out of harmony with those eternal forces, then you start clunking into them and are injured by those avoidable collisions, physically, mentally, emotionally. You know, the person who doesn't understand gravity, a cliff can be a death trap. If they understand gravity, then they know how to honor the law of gravity, that is, work in concert with it, and how to stay safe around a cliff. Last night we were watching a film. And you know that that's our playtime. And last night, of course, Michael J. was here and he wanted something exciting. So we found a film with Robert De Niro in it called Heist. Toward the end of the film, De Niro is one of the main characters in the film. And he's been living a pretty rough life, pretty brutal. And over his brutality, he's lost his family. He's lost his daughter, his wife, and now he's about to be in a threatened position with his life. And he's sitting talking to one of his employees and comes up with the line, because he's sitting there contemplating his own death and looking at all the regrets he has, and his insight is that if there are regrets in death, it means you didn't do your life correctly. I thought that was a pretty profound thought, because one who lives in harmony with the eternal forces is going to always be alerted to what's going on around them, how to function with the parameter within the parameters of the movement of those eternal forces around them, and always be in harmony. And in so doing, there's guidance and there can't be regret. And so I thought that was a very powerful idea to contemplate. And for people who cancel the thought, if you were facing your death today, if you sat down, it comes to me as an exercise to do in a workshop. If you sat down with pen and paper and started thinking, if today was my last day, my regrets would be, and go through your list, then you'd have a set of pointers to where your next piece of work is. And if you're continuing to behave in a way that would continue to create regrets, then they're the areas of your life where you want to change behaviors and start to understand more about these eternal forces. And so as I kind of sat meditating on that, contemplating that, and you've heard us talk before about the idea that when someone dies, the level of my trauma and pain and wailing and gnashing of teeth is only an indicator of the unresolved issues that I have with that person. And so based on De Niro's insight as the lead character in that movie, it became clear to me that if we have regrets over a death, it means that there's work within that relationship that needs to be done. If you contemplate someone dying, again, cancel the thought. But if you contemplate that, what would your regret be? Be powerful to sit down and make a list of all of those regrets and then begin to do wake-up sheets in those arenas and begin to communicate with people and clean those regrets up before they leave. You've heard us read the responsibility communication that David wrote back several years ago to his father, and one of the things he mentioned in that communication was that these are the kinds of things that often are literally, quite literally, taken to the grave. And so I want you to think about if there's someone in your life that if they died, you would regret. There was a story we shared probably 2 years ago now about a gentleman who, if I remember correctly, I believe he lived in Michigan, somewhere in the Midwest. And he heard that his brother was dying of cancer out in California. And he and his brother had a fight some 50, 55, I don't remember exactly, but 50 years earlier. And he could not remember what the fight was about. This man was incapacitated, so he couldn't drive, couldn't fly. And what he did was he went and bought a brand new riding lawnmower, get on it, and rode it to California to see his brother, clean up his regrets. Does anybody have regrets around? Now, I might suggest if any of those, especially if they're fresh or, it would appear that if you communicated with that person, it would just inflame again. I'd suggest you do some wake-up sheets around it so that you can go with a different energy. And remembering that literally whatever moves in you, if around a particular situation or particular person, hostility or fear moves in you, the movement of that energy literally, physiologically sets up a high energy wave. And you're literally pouring the energy of that wave onto the person that you're involving in your perception. And so if hostility or fear are moving, the energetic impact of that is like pouring acid on a person. If your perceptions around a person are based in love, then there's going to be a shift in energy. And that shift is going to tend to be toward love, because you're literally pouring a literal, measurable, energetic field on that person that, when based in love, is going to produce a totally, completely different result than pouring one based in hostility and fear. Oftentimes when people utilize the wake-up sheet, the wake-up process that we teach, forgiveness from the first century Aramaic, they're shocked when they go to talk to that person who every time for years has been in rage or fear or, there's been stuff in the relationship, and all of a sudden they do some work around it, and the other person changes, and they're like, wow, that's a miracle. It's like, no, it's not a miracle. I promise if you're pouring the active presence of love on the person you're speaking with, you're going to get a much different result than if you're pouring the acid of hostility or fear on them. Condemnation, gossip, slander, vengeance are all literal energetic dynamics that one spray within the cellular structure of your own body and spray outside of you a like energy onto the person that you're with. And so I invite you to consider making that list. Is there anybody in your life, if they died today, you would have regrets? I invite you to do some wake-up sheets around what your regrets are. Look at the goals involved for yourself or for them that were not achieved nor canceled. Go in and cancel those goals and clean up your own mind, and then open communication about that regret with them. You might be shocked at the kind of results you get. So that's the type of work we're here to support you doing, and we're honored and blessed and delighted that you choose to engage in the conversation. Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
Yes.
How are you, good sir?
I'm doing well. Just breathing into the moment, and I've been doing a lot of review for doing the Easter Sunday talk at the Unitarian Universalist Church, and reading through.
That's pretty awesome.
Reading through things from Joseph Campbell and Friedrich Nietzsche, and Joseph Campbell said that he learned from Nietzsche one of the things that I learned from you. One of the first workshops that I went to with you here was in Fox River Grove, and you said, now I just want everybody to think about some of the worst things that have happened in your life. And everybody groans, and you say, yeah, but don't worry about it. You're not going to have to make any confessions. Just pick one that's 5 years or more in the past, and then hold on to that for a minute, and then think about whether or not you, even no matter how horrible, how tragic it was, if it's 5 years or more in the past, I want you to raise your hand if you can see how that event has led to, directly or indirectly, led to some of the best things in your life today. And every hand in the audience went up, including mine. And that led me to this practice of getting up in the morning and priming myself to watch for the very early warning signs of my upset with anything that didn't go according to my plan. And I woke up the next morning with this thing that was just this full-blown realization. Well, actually what happened was, in the moment, I had this thought, I don't want to wait 5 years. And then a couple days later, I realized, full-blown, here's my plan. I have to be scanning my environment all day, every day, for anything that goes against the way I think it should go. And when I notice the irritation or the frustration coming up in me, I want to call a timeout, breathe into it, and just ask a whole series of questions, let them flow gently, put myself in that passive observer mode, and just ask any kind of question like, I wonder how this is going to work out for the best. I wonder how this is going to turn into a blessing. I wonder how this holds a lesson I need to learn to move to the next level, etc. These gentle questions while I'm just breathing and focusing on myself. And that practice has transformed my life in ways that words can't describe. Well, in doing the research for this talk on Sunday, Joseph Campbell describes Friedrich Nietzsche saying the same thing. Learn to bless all of it. Learn to welcome all of it. And so it reminds me of Guy Finley, and he says, what if every time something happens that goes against your plan or that stirs up something you don't like, what if every time that happens in your life, you could look at it as though life, the Creator was saying to you, hey, Tim, would you like to see what's keeping you from knowing me better and loving me more deeply? Every time I have an upset, it's possible, and it turns into an entirely different set of questions and observations when I realize, oh, there's a bigger plan going on here. It's not happening to me, it's happening for me, and I didn't realize I had all of this anger or fear or grief in me. And now that it's being shown to me, I can choose to remove it. And if I remove it, then I'm going to have more direct, loving experience of life unfolding in front of me, or me unfolding with life in the moment. And all I have to do is get my garbage out of the way. So there. That's just
sounds like a key to eradicating regrets.
Yep.
Sounds like a perfect parallel tool.
Yeah, Nietzsche said, whatever your fate is, whatever happens, you say this, quote, this is what I need, unquote. It may look like a wreck, but go at it as though it were an opportunity and a challenge. If you bring love to that moment, not discouragement, you will find the strength is there. Any disaster you can survive is an improvement in your character, your stature, and your life. What a privilege. This is when the spontaneity of your own nature will have a chance to flow. Then, when looking back at your life, you will see that the moments which seemed to be great failures, followed by wreckage, were the incidents that shaped the life you have now. You will see that this is really true. Nothing can happen to you that is not positive, ultimately. Even though it looks and feels at the moment like a negative crisis, it is not. The crisis throws you back, and when you are required to exhibit strength, it comes.
Right on track. Ties in with that scriptural thought that to those who believe in God, or those who are in relationship with love, all things work together for good. Everything moves in the right direction if we link it into that presence of love. And I was actually thinking a couple of days ago, Jeannie and I, you know, we've had a little bit of time to play here when the intensives are over. And I was thinking how cool it would have been if Jeannie and I had met when we were teenagers and neither of us had ever been in any other relationship, and especially the trauma that Jeannie shared that she went through in her first marriage with all the insanity that happened there. And as I was kind of contemplating that and saying, gee, that would be really cool, the next thought that came in was, well, and I wouldn't have been able to watch her as she processed these women through sexual abuse and tragedies in their lives because it would be a skill that she probably wouldn't have. So I don't know if that raises any thoughts for you, but I didn't share that with you, but I was just kind of contemplating that the other day. It just, I wouldn't have been nice to have never been in a relationship with anyone else, never been intimate with anyone else, and just how cool that would be. And so kind of led to the same place as what you're talking about. Any thoughts, Jeannie?
Not necessarily on that, but what did pop in my mind is that while, you know, that would have had its pluses for sure, but then we wouldn't have had Michael J. and Krista and Ryan. So, you know, there's also that direction to think of. And Camille's on the line, and we said we would continue her conversation from yesterday.
Great. Maybe we would add Michael J. and Krista and Ryan in one family. Who knows? But let's say hello to Camille. Young lady, how are you?
I'm improving day by day.
All right. Emile Coué, every day and every way, getting better and better, right?
I appreciate it. It's really wonderful, however, to think of what everyone else would refer to as being sick as just a healing crisis, and one that I'm supported with more than medicine and so forth to heal.
Well, we certainly hold the space for that.
I appreciate it. Well, we were talking about the controlling men in my relationship yesterday, in my five relationships at this point in my eternal life. And your wonderful associate, Julie Haverstick, called me later in the afternoon and said, I heard your remarks on the show and wondered if you wanted to do a worksheet. And I dropped what I was doing and we jumped into it. So I really learned a lot of, I learned so much in such a short period of time with her about how the behavior I learned as a child with a very strict father and a very obedient, subservient mother, who were incredible parents. I mean, they really knew enough to behave as adults. We never saw my parents arguing. We did see, you know, occasional situations where my mother would do the withdrawal thing and not speak to anyone, which was the only way she knew how to handle upsets. And my father practiced a kind of suppression. Women and children should be seen and not heard. So we would go to our room when we were upset. So I realized that I thought that I was only valuable and appreciated if the men in my life who earned the money and supported. And out of that, I really learned to put all of my desires and creative urges on the back burner and attend to, you know, what I was taught was more important circumstances. And so I realized that my control of these men that I felt, well, I'll say victimized, but anyway, suppressed by, was to leave the relationship, was to just drop it and get out of it. And that's why I repeated it five times. And always with really...
And of course...
Say it.
Of course, that's what you were taught to do as a child, right? If you're going to be an upset, leave the room. Go to your room.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
Same
right.
Behavior.
The amazing thing is that my parents were together until my father's death. They were married for 64 years. So, you know, that was always a trigger for guilt to me because I reached a point where I couldn't stay with one relationship or another. And found my way out every time. But I with this teaching, I really can see how I create my own reality and how when I release the goals that were driven by fear and anger and other negativity, I can really see so much more clearly the potential for a new experience. So we
awesome.
Really had a fabulous time, Julie and I, working together on controlling issues. And I really appreciate your telling me that that's where I needed to go yesterday.
Cool. Well, question, you know, you talked about the guilt if you weren't fulfilling that role. If you think back to your early life at home, when Dad would give the message that you're to be seen and suppressed, did he send messages based in guilt and shame as he sent you off to your room?
Basically, there was, I don't remember the words, but, you know, there was this kind of, not real angry, but very strict message, you know, stop that crying or leave the table. A lot of conflict came up at the dinner table. And I remember leaving the dinner table in tears often, very often, as a teenager, not as a small child.
Right. So it sounds like the message was, you're not acceptable.
Yeah.
Your voice is not acceptable.
That's the way I translate.
Notice that's what you've been playing out with Robert. Your voice is not acceptable.
Indeed. I do notice that. We have not achieved what I would call understanding in our communication. The message from him is, I don't understand you, and with that is a dismissive attitude. He drops the subject or leaves the room or just doesn't want to hear anymore about, you know, the concerns I have or the situation we're discussing. And the,
you know,
thing,
that would be,
go ahead.
That would be a perfect place. If you go to the YGAN website and download and print the responsibility communication letter that I spoke about a few minutes ago, that David wrote.
Oh,
it's a two-page letter.
Yeah.
Okay. So recognizing that it sounds like all your life from your very earliest childhood, your voice was not acceptable if it conflicted with the male in your life's voice.
Exactly.
And so I would follow the modeling, you know, the 7-step responsibility communication process and the modeling of that letter and write Robert a letter around that issue.
I shall
do it. And I think you'll find that it will open some new worksheets to do. And then when you've tweaked it, you know, gone through it a few times, done some worksheets around it, and been able to tweak it, you'll probably find that it will be very productive in Robert's interaction with you. And it sounds like, or the sense I get, you know, from knowing Robert, having spent some time with you guys, is that there's a certain place of insecurity that is overridden with hostility. And so perhaps thinking about creating a space safe enough for him to be able to own and look at the insecurity he has at being with a woman who has a voice, and creating a space for him to be able to heal through that, to be able to actually be with a woman who has her voice, and to be able to speak as an adult woman rather than out of the file of the child who still knows that her voice isn't valuable or valued.
Yes. We've developed a pattern where Robert allows, he gets a lot of late notices for bills, I'm sure, managing the many properties he owns in France, and then the stuff he's bought here, two properties he's bought here, is a lot of paperwork. But he's beginning to, you know, knowing that, even knowing the financial, what shall I call it, situation of my business and my income, he calls me with urgency and tells me, you know, this has got to be paid, you'll have to do it, and there's no discussion about it. And so then I wait for, you know, several weeks until, I don't know where his money comes from, he pays me back. So that is a kind of new thing that's been going on now 5 or 6 times. And interestingly, it's been going on since my business took such a hit from the bankruptcies of a couple of our customers. So I'm trying to, I don't like to use the word trying. I'm focusing on how to communicate more about that, because that's where I really get shut down when we talk about money. Uh-oh, did the call drop?
No, you're there.
Oh, I don't hear a thing.
Yeah, Michael is either on mute or he's dropped.
Oh, I see. Thank you, Dr. Tim. Thank you for everything you said earlier today. It's very meaningful to me.
So,
you're welcome.
Here was my comment.
Oh,
yeah,
thanks.
My comment was, notice that your languaging was, that's when I get shut down.
Okay.
Which would indicate that your mind believes that somebody or something outside of you can cause a shutdown inside of you. And, of course, we know that's denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial. When I live in denial, I have to dissociate from the part of my mind that I shut myself down with. Probably well learned in those early childhood experiences with Dad.
Absolutely.
So would it be more accurate to say there's the circumstance in which I shut down rather than there's the circumstance in which I get shut down? One of them's outside of you, one of them's inside of you.
So that is theirs and say again? How did you say that?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that you hold a belief probably from those early experiences with Dad.
Uh-huh.
And Dad probably with a child programmed the little girl very well with
yes.
needs and goals that had her believe that when he said jump, she said how high.
Right.
And that those goals were required by him as your power person to be set in order for you to be approved of or get what you wanted or what have you. What that leads to is that power person frames a goal and we unconsciously set it. And then we hold the belief that the power person is the one who set the goal for us or is in control there. When the truth is, the power person can certainly frame the goal, and the power person, as they usually do, can do all kinds of manipulations and punishments to try to force us to set the goal. You know, there's that old story about the little kid in the crib and Dad's yelling at the child. You know, the child's jumping up and down in the crib, and the father's, you know, you lay down and go to sleep. You lay down, you stop that jumping up and down. So finally, after so much, the child lays down. But in his head, it says, I'm still jumping up and down. It didn't set the goal to follow the goal that was, or it didn't set the goal that was framed by the power person.
Mm-hmm.
The child maintained control of its own mind. If we once habitually, and you've heard me in the class use the example of, you know, put your hand out and take a hold of that imaginary red rubber ball in front of your face. And I ask people, why did you reach for that ball? And maybe a third to a half of the people in the room will say, because you told me to. And then I ask the question, now everybody who believes that I told you to, notice you have resentment toward authority. And they all shake their heads like, well, yeah, that's true. How did you know that? Because if we're raised to believe that somebody outside of us can set a goal in our minds, then we feel totally controlled. If I realize that that person, and certainly, you know, everybody's pretty much going to be setting goals for you, or framing goals for you. But you're the only one, if you remember from Laws of Living, you're the only one who can set the goal. So Robert can frame the goal for you to feel like you need to be shut down, you need to be quiet, or what have you. But you have to set that goal in order for it to become a driver in your mind. Otherwise, you can sit in a centered space and say, thank you very much for framing that goal for me, Robert, but I don't think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to continue to maintain my voice, and I'm going to continue to use my voice. And that may take you back to 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years of age and having to say to your father, yes, Father, I realize you framed that goal for me, but I'm going to continue to use my voice, and I'm going to continue to maintain my voice, even though you want to shut it down. So now we're going to have a discussion to clean this up. And that's where I'm suggesting the responsibility communication might be useful.
Indeed it will. Even as you're talking, I can just feel energy building up and feeling good.
And part of it is probably going to be, and I'm saying probably because I think I've observed some of this, although it might just be my projection, but I think there's some insecurity and some fear for Robert for you to speak. And so, you know, in the way that that Julie supports you in working through things, you're maybe going to have to become Robert's support for working through that and be able to communicate. Well, you know, Robert, it seems like there's some deep upset that comes up for you when I speak my mind. And it looks to me like it might be based in fear. Would you be interested in looking at that and working through that? Now, that may create a whole other level of stress. Remember that when somebody's in blockage of truth and truth shows up, their stress goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, when their stress goes up, their stress is attached to getting rid of the source of the information. And that sounds like your dynamic with men. And the reverse dynamic of, okay, well, if I can't control this, then I'm out of here. I'm going to leave. So it sounds like it's been a two-way street, and that there'll be some simultaneous healing as that opens, and there'll probably be some places of discomfort. And, you know, you can express, gee, you know, Art, I really hear that you'd like me to be quiet because you're feeling stressed, but you know something? It's time for me to have my voice and to speak up, and it's time for you to learn to hear me. And for us to create a relationship that's based in some sort of equality rather than a sexist view that men speak and women are supposed to fall over and listen.
Correct.
And so there'll probably be some interesting healing crisis in that for both of you.
I feel sure of that. Yeah, I can
say it again.
I can manage it.
Right, but there were two words that came before that, I think.
Oh, I said I'm not afraid of it.
Okay, so then if you listen to your regulatory speech, what's one of the things you're probably going to be working through to do this?
Fear.
Your fear around it, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if there were only confidence in it, you would be saying just naturally out of regular speech, you'd just be saying, oh, yeah, I've got confidence. We can work through that. But when I say, oh, I'm not afraid of that, that says that there's probably some brain cells holding some fear under the surface that really don't want to peek here. And when I let myself see it, oh, so there's probably some hidden fear. And it'll probably be the hidden fear of, what would it have been like if you'd have been 10 years old and just spoken up with your full voice, lovingly, gently, respectfully, but with your full voice to Dad? What do you suppose would have happened?
A punishment of one sort or another.
Yeah. So my input is that it's time for the little girl to be treated lovingly, gently, and with respect and be honored, so that the woman can be treated lovingly, gently, with respect and be honored and have a voice. And then, of course, the other side of it is sometimes when one finds their voice, then they want to run the show. Then they think they should be the one shutting the other person down. Now, look, you just be quiet. I said my piece. Now it's not time for you. And it's exactly the same role reversal. So remember that when you're moving toward, I want to have an equal voice, you know, there's a line in the commitment that says, I commit to keeping communication open. Keeping communication open means that I'm willing to hear what you have to say, even if I don't like it. And when somebody says something that I don't like, that usually means there's some form of hostility or fear in me. And that's why I want them to shut up. And so if you find yourself ever pushing back and trying to shut someone else's voice down, it's not because of their voice. It's not because of what they're saying. It's exactly what we're talking about with Robert. It's because there's fear here. Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't agree with that. I don't want to watch. I don't want to look. No, don't talk to me. Don't you ever say that again. It's like, well, but if you're actually going to keep communication open, that means you have to keep communication open. Well, what happens if the communication is open? I go into rage. Well, then you get to heal your rage. Isn't that awesome? Well, what happens if I go into terror? Isn't that awesome? You get to heal your terror. Well, what happens if I become really sad? Well, wonderful. You get to heal your sadness. And when you heal all of that, then you just stand as a human being with a voice like anybody else. And it's safe to use your voice. And it's safe for other people to use their voices, even when they're saying things you don't like, because you're going to say some things Robert isn't going to like.
Indeed.
And so when we can create a space for that, you know, and when I make a space for communication and for somebody to say what they have to say, that doesn't mean that I need to accept it. It doesn't mean that I need to believe it. Doesn't mean I need to act on it. But it does mean that if I'm going to keep communication open, I have to at least be able to receive it rather than try to force them to shut down. And people who force each other to shut down, usually it's because they had a power person that shut them down. And when they wanted to speak, whatever the energy of the power person was, if it was rage, if it was manipulation, if it was put down, if it was degrading thoughts, if it was control, then all of that's going to come to the surface to be worked through in order for there to be people who can just have a conversation about things that perhaps neither of them likes. But then they can enter the practice of, and so now what I do is I keep love conscious, active, and present in the presence of a conversation I don't like. Whoa, there's a new parameter.
Very powerful.
And then you get to talk about things. Oh, it's awesome. It's just amazing. But those who are still stuck in a power person dynamic, that's a tough one. So it'll be a process. And we hold the space for the process.
Thank you.
Absolutely delighted.
Okay, I have
anything else we can support you with?
Well, I think I've got enough on my plate right now. I wrote down. I took notes on what you were saying about dealing
cool.
with my own fear, learning to listen to things I may not like, etc. And I think I've got plenty to work with in preparation. I won't see Robert for 6 weeks.
Right.
I fly to France on May 30th. So I feel like there's just limited discussions we can have by phone, and he doesn't really get into emails. And so I'm just kind of working with myself, which, of course, is all I'm ever working with, really, really do the responsibility communication as good as I can.
So a good mind shifter might be?
Uh-huh.
It's safe and healing for me to listen to every word that another has to say and be responsible for what that brings up in me. Because what most people do in that circumstance is they blame the other person for what's coming up in them. See, if you hadn't said those things, I wouldn't have fear. It's like, that's just baloney. You have fear, that's why I said those things. Hello? That's why the universe keeps coming back and giving us those messages, because we keep sending them out through our fear, our hostility, what have you. And so getting into a safe enough space to just allow that to take place and enter into the practice of keeping love conscious, active, and present.
Absolutely. I really
Yay.
Like that. Be responsible for what comes up in me. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, you'll probably get another call from Julie.
I love Julie's calls, so any call is always welcome.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, you have a blessed day, and we'll look forward to the next time we get face-to-face.
Indeed, I do, I do. Blessings to you, Jeannie.
And say hi to Robert for us when you talk to him. We send our love.
I certainly will.
Okay, blessings.
Bye.
Oh, what fun we are. Well, Jeannie, anybody else with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room? I will. Go for it. Can you hold the thought there, Jean?
Sure.
So, would you read that line again about what causes the stress?
Yes, and actually I didn't have my phone unmuted, so everybody else may not have heard it very clearly. So, they said, I am in a job for the last year as an office admin, stuck at a desk all day. By the end of the day, my neck and shoulders are so tight I get headaches. Some of this is physical, but it harkens back to a time when I ran my ex's business and was so pent up with stress. This with an obnoxious person. It's not the work. It's the person I'm working with that causes the stress.
Okay, there's where I want to hold it.
Okay.
So what you're going to want to have, first of all, in order to resolve this energetic dynamic within yourself, because you'll notice that person that used to cause your stress isn't there, but the stress still is. And the reason why you think the person that used to cause your stress was that person is because your mind lies to you. It doesn't tell you the truth. And unfortunately, the culture hasn't taught us what causes stress. We actually do. We have a two-hour video DVD of a workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. And what we explain in that DVD is that stress is an absolute necessity for life. Without it, you'd be dead. And we think that the circumstances around us and the people around us cause our stress. But this goes right back to the conversation I was just having with Camille. And when Dad sets frames a goal, and child sets the goal, by setting the goal, the child creates a stress. If in relationship to our power person, the power person worked to overpower us so that we came to believe that if they framed the goal, we had to set it, then we missed a step inside ourselves where we set the goal that causes the stress. Now, if you take a look around, you know, virtually everybody in any kind of power position in the world, if they're somehow in relationship with you, they're working to frame goals for you and trying to get you to believe that you have to set them. You know, think about the advertiser. The advertiser creates this visual scene of beauty and colors and fun rewards if you're walking into the scene with their product. They're framing a goal for you. If you buy it and you go, wow, if I have that product and I'll have all that wonderful stuff happening to me, boy, I'm going to buy that product. I just set the goal. And now I go walking past that store and I've got that goal set in my mind, and my mind goes, oh, we've got a goal to accomplish here. You wanted to buy that product and here's that store. Let me give you a stressor, a prompt for behavior. Turn right, go in the door, find that product, buy it, get the money out of your wallet and pay for it. That's your mind giving you instructions to cause you stress so that you will achieve the goal that you set in your mind. Now, the other side of the coin, the advertiser has the same ad and somebody else looks at it and says, wow, what a manipulative ad. It's really clear. They just want me to buy their product. they walk out the door and walk down the same street as you do, past the same shop that has that product, and they don't even look at the shop. They don't think of the shop because they have no stress that prompts a behavior to go in and buy the product. People who are in the game of control with others frame goals for others all the time and then use a whole series of manipulations, everything from patriotism to abuse, in order to force others to set the goals that the external power has framed for them. But what I'll invite you to do is recognize that when you use the words and they created the stress, now you're in our classic definition of denial. Remember, our definition of denial in this work is, the functional definition we're using is, when I think or speak as though something outside of me is a cause of something inside of me, then I'm in denial. When I live in denial, I dissociate with the part of my mind that creates this whole scenario for me. So when I speak as though, yes, and they caused my stress, I'm missing the whole piece that I had a goal, they framed for me, I set it, and now I'm stressed by that goal. The only thing that can ever cause you stress is a goal. There are automatic unconscious goals. For instance, your body's cells want to stay hydrated. So you have a goal when you get thirsty to drink water. That creates a stress, and you walk over to the sink and you drink water. If you didn't have that stress, you'd dehydrate and blow away. Stress is a necessary aspect of life, and it always comes from having set a goal in your mind. And the functioning purpose of the mind, I would offer, is singular and simple. There are people that will tell us that the mind is to protect a weak ego and all kinds of things. The purpose of the mind is singular. Once you give it a goal to accomplish, its job is to show you the best behaviors that it's got to produce that result. If the best behaviors it's got to produce that result are based in hostility or fear, then they're probably replicating a power person dynamic who functioned out of hostility or fear. But the singular cause of stress is to hold a goal in the mind. The singular purpose of the mind is to show you how to achieve that goal to alleviate your stress. The level of stress associated with any particular goal is determined by how big the space is between the way you see the situation and the way you want the situation to be. If there's a small, unimportant difference, there won't be much stress. Gee, I'd like to go by the store and get that product, but if I do, fine. If I don't, fine. I walk by the store, I don't even think of it because I have so little stress around it. But if I buy the ad and, wow, I'll be dancing in the daisies in the sunshine with this wonderful person who will love me forever, just like in the ad, if I want that and I'm way off on the, you know, the left side of the field with that one, and boy, I'd love to have that, then there's a great deal of stress, and I get within 10 blocks of that store and I'm heading over there to get the product. So first order of business I would offer would be to get clear on what causes your stress. It's always internal. It's always you. And that's a beautiful thing to understand, because now you're in control of it. Anytime there's a goal that's creating a stress for you, you can cancel it. Now, I can only suspect from the little bit that you've said that perhaps having run a business for your former, that maybe there was some hostility or fear used and there were pressures put on. And so you internalized a lot of that. And that being internalized, here you sit in this new job, and maybe the boss is totally, completely different, but you're not. And the internal stressors that have not been resolved about being manipulated in a position where you're doing this kind of an admin job, et cetera, et cetera. So the way to resolve that, I would offer, would be to enter into the forgiveness process, into the wake-up sheet, reality management. And to find that, if you go to the website whyagain.org. And the first two words on the page are start here. If you click that, it'll take you into a whole series of links that will show you how to forgive. And in essence, forgiveness comes from canceling a goal that creates a stress. When you cancel a goal that creates the stress, the end result of that stress collapses. And when it collapses, it gives you the opportunity to access the root of that stress, and that's when you can go in and change it. So that'd be the first place to work in your statement so far. And Jeannie, you want to go ahead and read?
Okay. So let me get back down where you had me stop. So you've addressed that. She says, you know, she spent 26 years with an ex in an emotionally terroristic relationship with a bipolar narcissist. I finally got rid of that and removed adversarial people from my life, but apparently I have something to learn from these egocentric people, my new boss. He's just obnoxious. The workload's not that stressful. It's dealing with his personality is. Some days are tolerable. Some days he comes in all jacked up on caffeine and has a condescending attitude. I had offered to her about canceling the goals for the stress, which you just went over again, and I also gave the links to the PowerPoint presentation, to the wake-up sheet, and also to the MP3s of radio shows where we've walked someone through the wake-up sheets. And you were referring to a power person, and I had also mentioned power person, and someone else in the chat room asked what we meant by a power person. And so then I said, it's someone who has more control over you at some time in your life, and you perceive it's survival to follow their direction. And so I said,
and they're not functioning as love. An important component of the power person is that that person is not functioning as a human being, as the presence of love. And that we perceive the circumstance as survival. And that's what leads to the power person dynamic. And that power person is usually a parent, though not always. And until that power person dynamic is resolved, and it's primarily resolved through forgiveness, there are only three behaviors that I'll be able to do for the rest of my life. And they're all related to the level of stress that I'm under. When there's no stress, I'll do what I did to get along with my power person. When stress starts to build, I'll do what I did to resist and survive with my power person. And when I become ultra-stressed, I'll do what my power person did to me that I hated the most. And so once I begin to forgive as to those dynamics, then I start to free myself of the power person dynamic. And I will no longer perceive others through my power person dynamic. Because what often happens is, if I perceive another through my unresolved power person dynamic, I'm in hostility. If I'm in hostility and spray the acid of hostility on them, and they're unconscious and don't know that's what's happening, they look at me and go, yuck, I don't like the energy around this person, and they become the obnoxious personality that you're talking about, playing right into your power person dynamic. So before you assess them as so much the problem in your life as your former was, I just invite you to look at those dynamics and start to do some wake-up sheets around them, and you might find that there'll be a big shift in that relationship. In the meantime, we're down to the last few seconds, and if it's appropriate, it'd be awesome to continue this conversation tomorrow. And in the meantime, we invite everybody to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, as we present the Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.